This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
As listeners of this show will surely know, I'm a huge proponent of stronger civics education. People hear the phrase civics education, and they often think of a K-12 class in government. States have enacted laws that require high school students to be able to pass the same citizenship test that new citizens must take. But is that the right approach? And what can we do to ensure civics is not just something we discuss briefly in school, but instead is a lifelong endeavor? Today's guest might have some answers. Donna Cohen is a former educator and librarian in Oregon. She runs a program called Civics for Adults, which includes interactive, in-person or virtual workshops that provide nonpartisan information about the political process and civic engagement. You can find her at www.civicthinker.info. Donna, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Thank you for inviting me, Josh. I'm happy to be here.
So your website, as I mentioned, civicthinker.info, opens with a quote from Justice Louis Brandeis. He says, quote, "The most important political office is that of the private citizen." What do you think Justice Brandeis meant by this quote, and why is it at the top of your website?
Well, I love that quote. Democracy, of course, means self-government, and that's the public. So if we are not engaged, if we are not part of the process, it's not actually democracy. And I think the quote basically captures that, and that's what I try to do in my workshops.
Yeah, so let's talk about these workshops, Civics for Adults. How did you start it? What's the origin story here?
Well, a few years ago, I realized that I was very interested in a variety of civics topics, that as a librarian, I was very good at research. Having been a teacher, I felt that I was in a position to be able to present these topics. And the main thing is I just felt that there was a really strong need for civics education for adults. So I basically put it all together and just started to do it. And I've been going at this for 9 years, and it's been quite successful.
That's really interesting. And I think one of the things you're tapping into is that we talk about public health. We had COVID, and there's often, you know, lots of discussions about public health. But I think we have an epidemic of civic health as well. And, you know, you see these surveys of the number of people who can name the three branches of government, or, you know, who can name the justices on the Supreme Court or their member of Congress. Are those the right questions to ask in addressing the civic health epidemic we have?
Yes, but it's incredibly incomplete. For example, we know that maybe half of the public do not realize that if there's a disagreement between the Supreme Court and the president, that the Supreme Court has the last word on the interpretation of the Constitution. That's a really important thing for people to know, for example, right now. So there are some basic knowledge pieces that we have to have, but it has to go way beyond that. A few years ago, our city club here in Portland did a civics ed study, and they said there were three things needed for, you know, being a good citizen, being engaged. One of them was basic knowledge of how the government works and some history. Also, critical thinking skills, and so that's one of my workshops. And then lastly, the disposition to want to be engaged. So my four workshops basically encompass those three areas, which I think together make the difference and encourage people to be good citizens.
So let's talk a little bit more about those workshops. As you mentioned, there's four, one on misinformation and propaganda, another on citizen activism, a third about the Constitution itself, and fourth about elections. Those last two, as a law professor of voting rights and constitutional law, are particularly interesting to me. Tell us what you specifically do in these workshops. I know they last longer than the time we have for our conversation, but just give us a brief overview. What do these workshops actually look like?
Okay, in the misinformation workshop, it's all based on examples from online posts, from emails, poll questions, deep fakes. I use real world examples and I explain and ask the workshop participants, especially if we're doing it in person, what they see. And then I explain what's actually going on there. And a couple of the principles that really underline that workshop. One is, well, I like to say a claim without substantiation is just an opinion. In other words, where's the evidence? We have an epidemic of people who make claims constantly, and this is online, this is politicians, even reporters a lot of times, just people making claims as though it were fact. And the thing is, we need to push for what's your evidence. So that's one of the most important things. Another principle of that workshop is, what's missing? Do you have all the information you need to actually make a judgment? Because so often we are given part of information. We're given information out of context. We're given just incomplete information. So we need to always be looking to make sure we have everything we need. The activism workshop really is very practically oriented. We talk about the structure of government and the different levels of government, because one of the key things is just going to the right level of government if you want to see change. There's no sense in going to the state legislature if you want a pothole fixed, for example. So we talk about ways to engage. A lot of people don't realize you can go to your city council or your county commission, and there's usually a time just for a citizen or a resident to just say what they want about something. They might have 2 or 3 minutes. There are boards and commissions and stakeholder committees that people can be on that are just volunteer opportunities, but can be very, very powerful. So, for example, in Portland, we radically changed our structure of our government this year. And those recommendations that we voted on came from a group of volunteer citizens that met for 2 years. So that can be a very powerful way to be involved. Your legislature, I gave testimony a couple of weeks ago down at the state legislature, and we can do that virtually now, so that's wonderful. There are bills in state legislatures that affect everybody's lives. In the elections workshop, we talk about how, you know, voting rights, voter suppression. We talk about alternative voting systems, which are now in parts of the country becoming more popular, ranked choice voting, for example. We talk about gerrymandering. And then I show how to use the campaign finance database from our state. So that's what we cover there. And then, although I love all my workshops, the one I'm most excited about right now is the one that I've renamed Representation, Our Federal Government and the Constitution. So we do talk about the creation of the Constitution, and there are a lot of myths around that that we sort of blow away, and a bit about then how it developed and the Bill of Rights. But then I spend a lot of time now on the concept of representation and the ways that our federal government, through the Constitution, is not as representative as the framers originally intended, and the reasons why that is, and the makeup of the House and the Senate and the Electoral College and so forth. And I think when people understand that, it's a lot of times our problems stem, in my opinion, from structural issues, not the people involved. I mean, sometimes we have people that aren't helpful to our democracy, but a lot of times it's really structural. So just an example would be primaries. I know in Oregon, and I think this is typical of a lot of places, a lot of people, there's something like 40% of voters in Oregon are unaffiliated with a party and they don't vote in primaries. Well, it's kind of hard to feel connected to your government if you can't vote in a primary. So anyways, we talk about some of these structural changes that we should be considering that would, I think, make people feel more connected and have more of a stake and just feel more represented.
Which might also help to fix the turnout problem that we have.
Yes.
You know, not only do we have, in my view, low turnout in, you know, the presidential election when everyone's paying attention, but sometimes those primaries really determine who the ultimate winner is in many places because of gerrymandering or otherwise. And those are, you know, very low turnout. So, you know, when I talk to people about civics education, I'm guessing many of them wouldn't necessarily be excited about going to sit in on what sounds like a class, you know, if they're not already in school, you know, a class on or a workshop on civics education. So how do you encourage people to go and how do you make it fun?
Well, it is fun and it is interesting based upon the reactions I get from people who do come. So people are very clear that they really enjoy the workshops. They enjoy it because they're gaining knowledge that they find useful, that they didn't have, that we have a give and take. It is true that a lot of people, you know, it's like civics, oh, what's civics, a constitution or whatever. So it's something that's sort of taken some time for people to realize. I mean, I have sort of followers now that are sort of want to know when, you know, when is my next workshop? Because they've taken one and then they see how interesting it is and then they want to continue. And I have some people who've taken them multiple times. I mean, even the same workshop. But as far as getting folks, the libraries or the sponsor, whoever has contracted with me to do workshop, have primary responsibility for publicity. And then I have an email list, I have a website, I have a Facebook group. So people find out from there too.
Civics education is often seen these days in our polarized political environment as a partisan issue. Often you hear that it's the left that wants, you know, more and better civics education. So how do you make sure that these workshops aren't seen as political? And how do we get away from that idea that improving civics education is not a partisan ploy?
It's certainly not partisan. We see people from all political persuasions being involved. We see people in town halls in, you know, Republican states and in Democratic states. So we see people are involved. I had a woman one time who came up to me afterwards. She said, I'm not sure we voted the same way, but I really like what you did, you know. And in another workshop, when a constitution workshop I did one time, people were quite pleased. But I had one person who thought I was too far to the right and one person who thought I was too far to the left. So I figure I'm, you know, hitting the right spot then. So I don't think this has to be seen as partisan. It is basic knowledge about how your government works, how you can engage with your government, right? And critical thinking skills. And all of those things are nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think you espouse a lot as a former librarian are the structures to get that education out into the world. I know that we talked about how you believe libraries are vital institutions for our communities. And libraries, you told me over email, are kind of vital to democracy. So, you know, what do you mean by that? And especially in the current environment where we're seeing cuts to public institutions like libraries, funding cuts, how do we navigate that issue in today's world?
I can't think of an institution that is more open and welcoming, friendly, you know, knowledgeable, a space for everybody. That's the thing about libraries that's so wonderful. But it is true that libraries are having a tough time. And I know there are libraries that at times have questioned whether they should invite me or have not invited me. Because even though they know that I am nonpartisan, they're afraid it might be seen as a partisan thing.
Mm-hmm. Are you optimistic about democracy, about voting and elections? And how can we stay optimistic right now?
That's a really great question. So one of the things that I do, the first thing I do in my activism workshop is I go back to the Gilded Age and I talk about how difficult things were then for so many people. And yet we got past that. When I was a kid and I took history in public school, I hated it. I hated it because I don't have a really good memory. And it was all about dates and stuff. And so, you know, now, though, I have a whole different appreciation for history. Because if you can understand the way things were, especially when there are some difficult times and how we got past them, it can give you hope for other times. And I think that we have to look at those lessons, see what worked and what helped, and do a lot of those same things and more. And so I'm optimistic in the sense that if people become aware of what we need to do for our democracy, then, yeah, we can reach a better point than we have in the past. I mean, we had a civil war. Right? We went through, women couldn't vote. We had the civil rights era. We've been through a lot of difficult times. So we have to remember that. And that's where really knowing something about history can be really helpful.
So I often ask guests, what's the one thing that listeners can do to support democracy? I'm guessing your answer will be take your workshop. And we'll mention in a moment how people can learn more about them. Is there anything else that you would advise listeners to do if they're not in Oregon or they aren't able to do the virtual workshop that you offer?
One thing that I have noticed, and I've read about, but I've also noticed personally, is that people who are engaged, right, in their communities and trying to do things, trying to improve things, tend to be more optimistic than people who are not engaged and who just sort of sit back and see things that they don't like and, you know, complain about them. So I would say look for something in your local community that you can work on. There are a lot of opportunities and the county and state level. But I mean, I worked on a transportation project for 11 years in my local community. It was a life and death issue. It took a lot of work, but we did win. And when you do that, when you get involved and see that you can make some change on, you know, a more local level, it gives you more faith. And the one other thing is I would try to tune in to some of the structural changes that people are working on, whether it's primaries or independent redistricting commissions or proportional representation. Look at some of those, you know, find the people in your communities that are working on making those structural changes.
Tell us, Donna, how people can find about you and your workshops.
Okay, well, my website is really helpful, civicthinker.info, and also a Facebook page, and the link is on the website.
Donna Cohen runs workshops called Civics for Adults, and you can find her and the workshop information at civicthinker.info. Donna, thank you so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thank you, Josh. It was a pleasure.
Josh, at the beginning of your conversation with Donna Cohen, you quoted Justice Louis Brandeis as saying, "The most important political office is that of the private citizen." Do you think that generally we don't think of ourselves as citizens as important to the process and kind of tend to think of civics as something that's just for government people and politicians?
I think that we don't think of our need to engage on a daily basis as citizens. I mean, many of us do go and vote, not enough of us, but many of us do go and vote, whether it's in, you know, local elections or the presidential elections. But we don't really think about the need to be a civically minded citizen on the other days. And you know, living in a democracy is not a once every 4 year endeavor. And that's what I really love about what Donna Cohen is doing with her workshops, is she's reminding people that being an important contributor to democracy is something that we can do all year round.
You know, in my travels, I occasionally run across people who are just checked out. They just feel that their bandwidth has been challenged to the limit. So why should they care? What are the dangers of failing to keep yourself informed about what's going on in the civics life of your community or your country?
Yeah, I think we see this a lot. People are busy, right? And that's why I asked her, how do you keep these things fun and engaging? Because you're right, it's so easy to just sort of, you know, let say, you know, the people in Washington are going to figure this out and I can have no influence whatsoever. And so I think one aspect to remember is that this does matter. It has an effect on your everyday life. You know, she mentioned, what happens if you have a pothole on your street? Do you actually know who to call to get that fixed? What happens, you know, when prices of goods get higher? Who do you call to say this is not okay and we need to change the current approach to economic policy? These do have impacts. And so I think the more we can make the conversation about, I mean, really self-interest. How are these issues going to affect your daily lives? And helping people understand that these things have an actual effect on their already busy lives is a way to help them understand that they need to be involved. And then the second thing I think we need to do is just make this stuff fun. You know, we highlighted Donna Cohen in her workshops. There's other organizations we've talked about on this show here in Kentucky, the group Civic Lex, which does really interesting, innovative programming. I love this organization I learned about recently in Denver called Warm Cookies of the Revolution. It's a nonprofit group that really makes civic engagement fun, and they bring warm cookies to all of their workshops. Maybe we'll try to get one of them on to this show to talk about that. So those sorts of things, making it real and making it fun, I think are important.
We're always willing to talk about warm cookies. After listening to Donna Cohen talk about civic engagement, what's your main takeaway from that conversation?
That people are clamoring for this information, that there is a real need out there. I mean, the one question I have still is, how are we reaching people who are kind of checked out, as you mentioned, you know, who might not feel like they have the knowledge or the desire to be involved? And I wonder how many of her workshop participants are, you know, really non-voters who think the system doesn't work for them? And how do we capture those people as well? How do we engage with those people? But to me, the number one takeaway here is that she's right. She's absolutely right that we think of civics education, when we have discussions about it, as high school courses on memorizing the three branches of government. And then once people graduate high school, we hardly ever talk about civics again. And that's why I used the term, which I think she really agreed with, of the civic health epidemic, to think about, you know, this is a problem that really plagues the concerns of voter apathy, the concerns about voter turnout, the concerns that democracy isn't really working. And one community, one workshop at a time, I think, is the way to fight back against that. I think that is the cure, or at least one of the cures, to this problem that we have.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU. The slate is clean.